Working. Hey, hello. All right, so just a few introductory words. First of all, take a seat. Hi. Something you already know about, but I decided to say a few words about this. About the silence. Why keeping silence? Okay. Well, first of all, there's another group who keeps silence, so we better keep quiet. No, I'm kidding. That's not the main reason. But basically, in this situation, in this retreat setting, what is as a basis to make this most effective is to keep what are called the 10 virtues. Now, since it's pretty easy to refrain from killing, stealing, and sexual misconduct in this setting in particular, so don't need to make a rule. There are no mosquitoes at this time of the year, so no one is tempted to squash a mosquito. And then, in terms of killing anyway, not a problem. Stealing, not a problem. And no sexual misconduct. So then the danger arises with the four non-virtues of the speech, harsh speech, lying, divisive speech, and senseless gossip. Now, okay, we could spend the time and try to watch all four and make sure we don't break any, but if we don't talk, we don't break any. So it's the safest, right? And instead of engaging in any of the non-virtues, to keep the mind on the teachings, to keep mindful when you walk from one place to the other, when you're in your room, just what's happening in the mind, just watch. And as you'll find out, with the teachings, with this particular topic here, meditation is extremely important. It's not difficult to understand the first four perfections. There's nothing difficult about them. It's difficult to do it. Okay? So therefore, to keep mindful, and if for some reason you need to communicate, to have those four always in the back of your mind. Not to engage in harsh speech, not to lie, not to engage in divisive speech, and senseless gossip. Okay? All right. So this is just to create a good foundation. And also, when the mind is mindful, introspective, if it's attentive, then to not break the three non-virtues of the mind either. Because that's, of course, most important, to not have any ill will, or in other words, harmful kind of intent, not to have any attachment, or have no, what's the other word, covetousness, as like wanting things, like being overwhelmed by attachment, and of course not having any wrong views. Okay, so it's easier when we keep the other seven to then focus very mindfully on the last three. So this is a good opportunity to do so. So to keep the silence. And you're going to be my guinea pigs. Because I'll try something new with this course. As I was preparing, as I was making my notes, because it's a lot of material, I decided it may be most beneficial if I teach for some time on a particular part and we meditate for some time. And I teach and we meditate, and I teach and we meditate. So instead of having just one analytical meditation, I'll speak about a few things, and then we sit down for about 10 minutes, reflect upon what we've discussed. So it really goes deeper, and it's not just intellectual information that goes in here, and of course goes out there again because it's so much, so overwhelming. So let's try that and see how you like it. If you don't like it, next course we won't do it. Or if already before that you start protesting, then I'll stop. But anyway, I thought this was maybe more effective. So we won't really have any meditation session as planned for tomorrow evening, meditation 7:15 to 18. We just continue with this, okay? All right. And I don't know exactly about the timing, like it's not going to be like half an hour exactly on the spot, because I also have to finish a certain part of it, But let's see how it goes. I'm thinking maybe half an hour speaking and then 10 minutes just thinking about it. So I'll guide you through it, go through some of the points again, but to really allow it to sink deeper and allow you time for some analysis, kind of more focused, more intensive analysis. And then also, and I'll speak about this, we'll start with a minute of breathing just to calm the mind. Then there'll be some analysis. And then lastly, what is so important is whatever kind of feeling arises after you've meditated, there's some feeling like maybe some kind of determination, some sense of, yes, I should do this. Yeah, that makes sense. Or maybe even something else, like, I don't know, whatever their feeling is, but to concentrate on that feeling and allow this to sink in. You just focus on that mind and make it like soak kind of deeper, if you like. Some people describe it as like your mind gets soaked by the feeling, or it just sinks deeper to a more innate kind of level, if you like. All right, so let's start. A lot of perfections to cover, and it is very extensive. Especially patience and generosity are very extensive. So let's start. Okay. So I based my notes basically on the Lam Rim. It's the most extensive. And if we get time, I'll also mention the Abhisamaya Alamkara. No, sorry. The supplement to the Middle Way, Chandrakirti's commentary on the fundamental wisdom, which also deals with, well, the first four chapters deal each chapter with one of the paramitas. So this would be a good time to mention them, but just depending on the time. All right. So first of all, the first six, I don't even want to call them perfections. They're called, actually in Sanskrit, I prefer the word paramitas. Okay, so paramita, because perfection, oh, I think in the 21st century anyway, we're totally obsessed about being perfect, and it gives so much pressure already. And it depends on how you look at perfection, but I think if you say perfection of generosity, it seems to imply that everyone is free from, you've been able to give to everyone, you've perfected generosity in the sense that now there's no one left to suffer, which of course is not true. So even the Buddha is still limited because the Buddha is not omnipotent. So therefore, perfection, I mean, from a living being's point of view, of course, it doesn't get any greater. So the generosity of a Buddha, that's the best any living being can achieve. So from that point of view, the word perfection is used. But I prefer to say paramita. And so paramita has different meanings. Well, parama in Sanskrit means the highest. Highest or the chief, primary, most excellent. So therefore, it can be here rendered to mean excellence or perfection, if you like. I mean, excellence or superior. And then another way of looking at it, or another way of to speak of the etymology of the meaning of the word paramita, is to divide para and mita, those two syllables. With para means beyond, and mita means mita kind of means that which has arrived. So para means beyond, or the other shore, the other side, or the other further bank or shore. And then mita means that which has arrived. So that is similar to the Tibetan translation, paroduchimba or parchin. Parchin is the short version of paroduchimba. Parul means kind of over there, the other side. Chimba means having gone, having arrived, or having went, right? So having gone to the other side. So it's kind of like a transcendental state, if you like. But transcendental just means going beyond from the egocentric state to the non-egocentric state. In other words, going beyond the ordinary, driven by our self-grasping, or by even the imprints of the self-grasping, going beyond to a non-egocentric, to a non-self-centered state. So that would be the paramita, so having gone beyond, having arrived beyond. Okay. All right. So then, Therefore, these six paramitas are mainly concerned with overcoming the self, the misperception, and the self-centered attitude which arises from the misperception. Okay. So in Mahayana Buddhism, it's the Prajnaparamita Sutras, the Lotus Sutra, and many other texts. They list the six perfections in their original terms. Like dana is the word for generosity, sila, which also means sila means kind of like coolness for ethical conduct or ethics. Kshanti is patience. Virya is effort, joyous effort, or diligence, perseverance. Dhyana is the one point of concentration, and prajna is wisdom. Okay, so these are just the Sanskrit words. And the order of those six perfections, of course, is seen as extremely important, because the first one is the basis for the next one, is the basis for the next one. So each of those perfections, they get harder and harder to do. And the previous ones, so generosity, makes it easier to practice ethical conduct, makes it easier to practice patience, and so forth. And of course, lastly, there's wisdom. But with each practice, actually, if the practice is done properly, with generosity, you also have the other ones. So when you practice generosity, you also have the practice of ethical conduct or ethical discipline. You also have patience. You also have joyous effort or diligence. You have concentration and you have wisdom. And we'll speak about them. They're mentioned with each paramita. So I'll go through the first four. And with each paramita, it will be described why the other five are also present. So we'll speak about this. But anyhow, there is this kind of progression here, which also explains why a bodhisattva who has reached the first bhumi, which is simultaneous, or which happens when you reach the path of seeing, at that time you focus on the first bhumi, on the paramita of giving, on the second bhumi, on the paramita of ethical conduct or ethical discipline. The third paramita is patience. The fourth is joyous effort, and so forth. And you speak of not just six perfections, but also 10. So then all the bhumis are associated with one of the perfections. Okay. So now, basically, the idea is with regard to the six perfections. Well, there are different levels. There are different levels of the six perfections, in the sense of depends on the motivation we have. So with regard to one's motivation, one can practice, for example, generosity in order to attain happiness in this lifetime. It's not usually mentioned, but I think it can be mentioned. I don't think there's any fault oftentimes they don't mention a Buddhist goal. They don't mention the goal of happiness in this lifetime, because people automatically, in order to attain happiness in this lifetime, accumulate non-virtue. They're more likely to accumulate non-virtue in order to gain happiness in this lifetime. So right from the beginning, it is not seen as one of the goals. It's not seen as one of the destinations. Because the moment you look at future lifetimes, there's no way that any negativity could lead to future happiness, because we can't take anything with us except the karmic seeds. So it makes sense that by focusing right away, initially, at future lifetimes, that our actions become much purer. But that is only possible if we have some conviction in future lives, and also if we have a sense of renunciation, not being so concerned with the happiness of this lifetime. But I think there's no problem in including also generosity, for example, in order to feel good. Like right away when we're generous, when we practice unconditioned generosity, I should say, without any expectation to get back any worldly kind of reward, such as fame, or getting something back in return, getting a good reputation, etc. If it's just for the sake of being generous, without expecting anything back, then right away there's a sense of peace, we feel happier, it feels right. So that could be one motivation. But then, of course, one can take it further to give with a motivation to what? Experience future happiness, to be reborn in a state that offers many different opportunities, different freedoms, etc. And to experience also happiness in those states. Okay? So usually, actually, generosity is not associated with positive rebirth. It is ethical conduct that is responsible mainly for a rebirth in higher states. And then in order to have certain opportunities, it is generosity that provides those. But even generosity in itself, it does provide or does serve as one of the conditions for higher rebirth. And then, of course, one can also practice generosity in order to overcome the three types of suffering and to become liberated. And the highest goal would be to practice generosity for the benefit of all sentient beings so that we may be able to benefit others in the most effective way. And for that, we want to become enlightened. Okay. So, of course, here, this being the Mahayana goal, that our goal would be to generate the Mahayana motivation conjoined with generosity. Does anyone not know what it means to have bodhicitta conjoined with generosity? Is there anyone who doesn't know what that means? Generosity, and we come to this in a moment, it needs to be explained, but generosity is mainly a mental state, right? It is a mind that gives, a mind that wants to give. Okay? So we do not say that it's only mental, because of course the giving, the physical giving, verbal giving, as in like verbally giving consolation, verbally helping someone, that's also a type of generosity. If we spend our time, give people advice, protect them from fear, etc., or physically, of course, giving something. So that is also generosity, but only if it's motivated by the mental state of wanting to give. So the mental state of wanting to give should be there as a motivation, and it should be there at the time of the action. Now, if that mind that wants to give, if that is conjoined with bodhicitta, what does that mean? What does it mean if it's conjoined with bodhicitta? Does it mean that when we give, so it's one type of awareness. The giving mind is a type of awareness which wants to give, right? I mean, I think the most effortless example of giving is when we give to ourselves. A good example of generosity, the purest kind of generosity that we have right now, when we just want to give to ourselves. So really, that feeling of wanting to give to ourselves, the only difference is if we want to give to others. With that same kind of spontaneity, with that same kind of effortlessness, so instead of wanting to give to oneself, now wanting to give to others. Okay? So that's the kind of generosity here. Okay? So if you want to get a feeling for what is that wish to give, well, we have it all the time when you want to give something to yourself, spontaneous, effortlessly, joyously. Now, except you don't give it to yourself, you give it to another person. Or if you have children, you know, if you give something to your children, that joyous, effortless, spontaneous ability to give. Okay, that's the kind of feeling. Except the person now, who you give it to, that is a little more difficult. But when I say it is conjoined with bodhicitta, what do I actually mean? Does bodhicitta have to be present in that moment? Do you have to, before you give, you should have the wish to give, and while you're giving, you should have the wish to give, okay? It may not always be present, but there should be at some point in time while you're giving also be that thought to give. All right, so what about bodhicitta? Does it have to be present? Shaha says no. So what's your suggestion? Okay. Okay, so where would it be then if the, so first you generate bodhicitta, okay, so before to have the thought, may I become enlightened for the benefit of all sentient beings. Okay, so then after that, the mind to wants to give arises and it is conjoined with bodhicitta. What does that mean? Even though bodhicitta is no longer there, it is still conjoined. What does it mean? But what does it mean to be conjoined with something? Where is bodhicitta in that moment when the other one arises, when the wish to give arises? Where is bodhicitta? Is it manifestly there? No. It's in the back of our mind. What's another word of expressing that? It lies dormant. It lies latent. But even though it lies dormant, it's in the back of our mind, or it lies dormant, it's not manifestly there. In other words, we don't wish to become enlightened for the benefit of all sentient beings. That mind is not there. We don't have that wish in that moment. But it lies dormant, which means anytime we want it to arise again, it can arise. So it lies latent or dormant in that moment. But why is it conjoined with the generosity? What makes it conjoined? Okay, to conjoin actually means something very specific, that it gets influenced by bodhicitta. To be conjoined means that bodhicitta makes the mind that wants to give stronger, and the mind that wants to give makes bodhicitta stronger. They enhance one another. Does that make sense? It influences the mind that wants to give. It influences it. So the best example I can come up with for a mind that influences another mind, even though it's not present. I've mentioned this mind before. I gave this example, like when you're very, very sad, and even your sense consciousnesses are influenced by the sadness, such that the sky doesn't seem as blue, doesn't seem as bright, food doesn't taste as good as usually it would. That means you're influenced by the sadness. The mind is just a little dampened, okay? So, or if you're in love, if you're in love with someone, newly in love, you know, there's this fresh feeling, it's very strong, then any food tastes better. Any thought you have is brighter and clearer. Now here, bodhicitta is like being in love, except you have love for all sentient beings. So that type of awareness is such that it brightens your wish to give. It strengthens it. It gives it some extra force. So even though bodhicitta is no, like first you had the thought, may I become enlightened for the benefit of all sentient beings. Then that thought goes away and a new one comes. I want to give now to this person. And it's like underneath the underlying kind of wish is all sentient beings. So it's not really manifestly there, but it's still influencing you. That means your two awarenesses, the mind that wants to give, generosity, and bodhicitta are conjoined. Right? Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, that's about the object you give. Yes, that's true. Yes. But what I meant was like when you have the wish to give, there's no wish to become enlightened for the benefit of sentient beings in that moment, right? It could be alternating very quickly, right? For the benefit of all sentient beings, the wish to give. But you don't do it simultaneously. It's not possible. I don't think it's possible that you have both, really, to wish to give and to the wish to become enlightened for the benefit of all sentient beings. You do it alternately. But one influences the other. So the stronger your bodhicitta, the stronger the wish to give. The stronger the wish to give, the stronger your bodhicitta. Does that make sense? I'm not contradicting what you're saying. That's absolutely right, what you said. But the conjoining, this idea of conjoining, it comes up all the time. This word conjoining, you have one mind conjoined with another. It doesn't mean you have to have both simultaneously. Another example is wisdom and bodhicitta. Right? Okay, so here we're aiming for generosity that is conjoined with bodhicitta. That should be the driving force. Okay? All right. And only when those, any of these, so the ones I've said before, so the wish to have happiness in this lifetime, conjoined with giving, okay, or the wish to have future, happy future lifetimes, that wish conjoined with giving, or the wish to be liberated conjoined with giving. So again, these motivations are again in the same way conjoined. One grows stronger because of the other, all right? But so the moment any of those conjoined with a particular wish, with a particular motivation, when this arises spontaneously and effortlessly, you have basically achieved that type of generosity. So in the case of the last type, well, that would be the paramita of generosity, when it's totally effortless and spontaneous. So this is actually only when you're Buddha, that is totally effortless, totally spontaneous. This state of spontaneity, there are different degrees, of course, it becomes more and more spontaneous, more and more effortless. So sometimes we call something spontaneous relative to the state before. Before there was so much effort, it took so much time. So in comparison to the earlier state, it's spontaneous. But it becomes more and more spontaneous and less effort is required. And the least effort or the total absence of effort and absolute spontaneity is reached when you're a Buddha. Okay? Does that make sense? So just the difference between those different motivations. So of course the motivation we do not want to have at all times, at any time, is to have fame or be praised, have any kind of worldly reward. Except for, you know, just feeling good about, that's okay. But to reach any of the, well, eight worldly concerns, well, the first four, any kind of pleasure, other than just feeling good about the action, but any kind of other kind of pleasant experience, praise, gain, or good reputation. All right? So, and then with this in mind, well, talking about generosity, well, we can check, we may wonder, if, I mean, this is a good example, we may wonder, am I generous or not? Right? So I want you, and this is will be once we start meditating, very important anyway, to really ask yourself, am I generous? Now, we're very generous with certain things. I'm very generous with my garbage. You know, bag of garbage. Oh, please have it. Very generous. So it depends on the object, right? So objects that I'm not very attached to, easy. Garbage, very easy, super easy. Things that I'm attached to, very difficult. So it depends on the object, of course. But a good way to check is, am I happy to pay my bills? Because actually, if you get a bill and there's a sense of, I mean, you've actually gotten something for. You get a bill, you have to pay, but it's not even generosity. It's you're paying for something that you have received something for. So I think a good example to check how generous we are is when we get a bill. Because if we practice generosity motivated by the Mahayana motivation, it should be wanting to give to anyone, right? And if then a bill arrives because of the electricity we have spent or the water we have used. I don't know whether you have to pay for water, but yeah, you do. For the telephone that, you know, we've used, etc. And these bills arrive, there's a sense like, it's a good sign. Whoa. You know, it shows there's a type of miserliness, stinginess. Exactly. Exactly. Wonderful opportunity. Yeah, yeah. But I'm saying the way to test yourself is your feeling when a bill arrives. How do you feel? Just a first test. I'm just saying we need to check how generous are we, right? How generous are we? How can we become first to see what our limits are? Because what is very important is never to give without wanting to give. Don't give if you don't want to give. So initially, we talk about generosity, it seems impossible. It seems like, if you hear some of the generous actions, well, we don't need to do this right now. No one forces us to do it. To see this as a goal, as something worthwhile, and then to check, how generous am I? So we talk about the person giving, that is us. So what keeps us from giving? Number one, which recipient do we like to give and which recipient do we not like to give? And what is it that we like to give? So each case is different. Are there times I'm more happy to give when my stinginess is a little less, or are there times when I'm more stingy? Okay. So these are all different things to reflect upon. For example, different techniques that are described. One technique is don't always count your money. Because if you know exactly how much money you have, it's harder to give. If you have, because you feel like, oh, if I give this away, I have less. You get used to, I have this much money. Oh, if I give this away, I have less. Whereas if you go, let's say you have 5,000 shekel in the bank, it's not that much, but it's okay. You have 5,000, you feel, I have about 4,000. I have about 4,000 shekel, that's my money. And then when you see the extra, that's extra. So to always go a little lower, and think, I have roughly around 4,000. So those, this is mine. Or, of course, you could also do as the Mormons do, and I'm not sure, do religious Jews do the same thing, to leave 10% of their annual kind of income to charity? I mean, ideally, I heard the Mormons do that. I'm not sure about Muslims. They do, yeah. So anyway, to take 10%, you could do that right from the beginning, to take a certain percentage and feel, this is not mine. Okay, this I give away for charity. So initially, from the beginning, if you have 5,000 shekel, well, 4,500, those are mine. That's my money. And the rest is just sharing your bank account. It's others, you know, you've already. So to be, this is my money, then we grow attached and it's harder to give. It's better not to be totally precise about how much you have. Okay, it depends. But there are some people who find it harder if they know exactly how much they have and they go beyond. There's a feeling of loss. Even though still having 4,500, that's still plenty. But it's relative. So it feels. Anyway, so these are a few things we can check up on. Number one, how hard do we find it with regard to paying a bill? Are there times when we find it hard to give? Are there occasions, are there people we find it hard to give to? So maybe we spend a few moments reflecting on that. Let's try that. So I'll try and lead you through it, but I give you some time to calm the mind. So we spend a few moments breathing. And then I'll talk a little bit. So now try to reflect on what generosity is. Generosity is a mind that wants to give. Wants to give one's possessions, one's body, and even one's merit indiscriminately to other sentient beings. Now ask yourself whether you have miserliness, stinginess, do you find it difficult to pay your bills? How much of your possessions would you be able to give to others? Would you be able to give your body, sacrifice your life? Or give parts of your body, your kidney, your blood? Parts of your skin? And if it were possible, could you give away your virtue, your positive karma to others? How much could you give away? I kept that short just to get more into it, just to be a little bit self-reflective. Okay. Anyway, so returning to this idea, so maybe we have already a sense how much we can give away, how much we cannot give away, to get to know our own limits. And that sense of asking yourself what you can do should always be there. So always take it personally. Whatever I say, what can I do, what can I not do? Okay, to keep self-reflecting at all times, as if I was just talking to you personally, asking you, can you do this or not? Okay, so first of all, we said, so generosity refers to the consciousness that wants to give, plus to the physical and verbal actions motivated by this attitude. That's what it means to give. So if you give verbally, if you give mentally, you give. If you give without the wish to give, that's not giving. So the mental is most important. Now, usually in this context, it is explained that, well, if we can give like a Buddha, if we're able to give anything, anytime, to anyone, indiscriminately, at all times, that does not mean that we attain the completion of the paramita of generosity, or it means we do complete the paramita of generosity, if for the benefit of all sentient beings, being able to do it, but we will not eliminate poverty. Okay, some people may think that, and usually Chantideva is quoted in this context, where it says, if generosity were perfected, or one has transcended, basically perfected generosity, or completed, by removing beings' poverty, since beings are still destitute, how could past Buddhas have perfected it? So it doesn't mean that we've removed poverty. It means that for a person, him or herself, this... any kind of stinginess, any kind of restriction, if you like, is gone. Inhibition is the word, right? Inhibition, as in like not being able to give. So if all that is gone, then you've attained the paramita. In other words, you just want to give to others in spontaneous and effortless. So it's important to understand the goal, because if we know where we want to go to eventually, we can check our mind and always compare it to that. And of course, not be discouraged, but rather be encouraged. Oh, there's more work to be done. Okay. So, as with everything, therefore, it is the mental aspect, the mental attitude. The physical and the verbal are secondary. Okay. So, generosity is brought to a level such that any kind of clinging to one's own things, one's body, resources and root virtues is eliminated. No more clinging. So body means giving parts of the body and possibly the entire body if it is beneficial. It's not about like, oh, just for the sake of giving your body. You have to make a choice sometimes. It's not saying that at all times you should give away your body, even when it's become easy. Because if it's better to stay around, if you have disciples, for example, you're like a high lama and you have disciples, and they would be desperate if you wouldn't stay around, right? So it's always, but the willingness to give, and possibly to give parts of your body if someone needs it. I mean, you know, when people have burns, you can do a skin transplant. So take part of your skin and another person, you know, gets a skin patch. They say it's terribly painful. I've never tried it, but it's terribly painful. Or giving a kidney. You can still live with one kidney. Giving one eye. I once heard there was a Sarah monk, and he heard about, I think it was a girl or another guy who was blind on both eyes. He heard the story. It was some Tibetan girl, I think. They put it in the Tibetan newspaper. And I said, this person needs, if she had another eye, then she'd be saved. And he said, I'll give my eye. And he gave his eye. He gave one eye. Amazing, right? That's pretty difficult, because it's not that easy. You can still see, but you don't see. They have the same quality of perception if you have only one eye. So he decided, I give it away. And I've also heard of monks giving their kidney to no one, to a person they don't know. So you meet those. They're usually, I mean, they don't want it to be announced. They don't look for fame and reputation, so it's low-key, and unless someone decides to write about it, you never even hear their name. They want it anonymous. They don't even want other people to know. So at least giving blood, that's already, I mean, that's not even difficult. So as part of the practice of generosity, to go every now and then, how often can you do it? Once a month, twice a month, without taking money for it. I know back home, I don't know about Israel, you can get 20 euro for one donation. Or if you do it with a Christian organization, you get a breakfast. So anyway, to choose maybe the one that does not give you any reward, you just, and that's where you give part of your body. Okay? So you may feel a little crabby, you may choose a Thursday to do it, no, Friday to do it, and then Saturday you can rest. Anyway, all right. So now when we look at the Lamem Chimo, it has a very nice way of dividing, giving different outlines. And they're a little complicated, they may seem a little weird, repetitive at times, but it's, even though they're repetitive in the sense that some of the ideas are repeated, but they're always slightly different. There's different aspects. So allow me to go through them, and we'll try with the meditation to actually intensify or to introduce these ideas so that they become, yeah, intensive, such that they really become relevant to our own life. The first part is what generosity is. We've already discussed that, the nature of generosity. What is generosity? How to begin the development of generosity, how to start, where to start. We have to start somewhere. Then the categories of generosity and a summary. That's pretty straightforward. Okay, so what generosity is, as I said, we just discussed it. So generosity, Shantideva says, generosity is perfected. It is said through the attitude of giving away to all beings, all your possessions, along with the effects of this. Therefore, generosity is a state of mind. Okay. So how to begin the development of generosity? So usually, well, first of all, we're overwhelmed. I think the feeling of giving, if it's too much, if fear arises, if there's a sense, you know, if you have the thought, oh, I should give everything, there's fear. It's a natural reaction that there's fear, okay? So, therefore it is said, it's important not to give before one is ready, to only give what one joyfully does. Because there's one problem. If you have regret for a positive action, if you regret a negative action, after you've done a negative action, you generate regret. Depending on how strong the regret is, that regret is positive. It becomes positive, virtuous. Whereas if you regret a positive action, then the result is that that regret becomes negative. So when you practice generosity, you give someone a whole chunk of money, and then you decide, oh gosh, that was too much. There's regret. So not only is the money gone, I mean, you can get the money back, but then it would become stealing. If you were to take it back, that would be, you have given it and you take it back. That's a type of stealing. The regret is negative. So, and if you don't take it back, well, the money's gone too. So either you just force yourself to just rejoice, never mind, it's gone, and not to generate regret, or you don't give that much in the first place. Yeah? So they advise, they say initially, because it is really just for our mind to grow more accustomed to it, to take it slowly, to not force it. There are other things where you can put in more force, right? Joyous effort, for example. There's no regret later on that you're like, oh, I was putting too much effort in it joyfully. No, there's no real place for regret. Or like ethical conduct, I don't think there's really, oh, I've refrained from killing for too long now, or I've refrained from lying for too, there's no regret. And then patience either, I mean, you can never be too patient, right? I mean, you can become someone's doormat, but that is just being like, that's not necessarily patience, that's maybe just being, you know, allowing people to walk all over you, but that's not patience. So I think really the greatest danger is with generosity. Regretting. So negative karma could be accumulated. This is why it's stressed at the beginning. We need to understand generosity well and do as much as you can not to regret this. So this part is important, to always ask yourself, will I not regret it? Okay? I'm reminded of one of my classmates. He said they went to the Kalachakra initiation And His Holiness got sick at the time, and he told everyone in the audience, like, you got the initiation, never mind, you know. And at the end, everyone was able to come forward, those from Tibet, and make an offering or offer a kata. And my classmate told me that someone from his village was there, and the husband and wife, and the wife was always very stingy. And the husband had great, I mean, they both had great faith in His Holiness, but the husband was very generous. And he was standing in the queue, coming closer to His Holiness, and he took out 500 rupees he wanted to offer to His Holiness, and his wife, like, that's too much, don't offer that much. So you have this opportunity to give an offering, and she's telling her husband, don't offer so much to His Holiness. I mean, 500 rupees is not that much, right? Anyway, what was reminded of my classmate telling me, you know, it's like, don't give that much to His Holiness. So we'd speak about this. Of course, there's a field. As the recipient also makes plays a huge part. You want to give more to a certain recipient, etc., due to the accumulation of merit and so forth. So there's a difference, at least. You don't want to. You want to indiscriminately give, but there is more of merit regarding to this the field. But we speak about this. The recipient plays a role. Okay. Anyway, so what do we need to understand initially to begin the development of generosity? Well, we need to understand, of course, what generosity is, and we've already done that. Then the goal, the Mahayana goal. What is the kind of generosity we want eventually to gain? Effortless, spontaneous, anyone. Anything to anyone, right? At all times. So with regard to the giver, at all times being happy to give, giving anything necessary, giving effortless, spontaneously to anyone, indiscriminately. Whether it's a horrible serial killer or it's His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Indiscriminately. Difficult, right? Oh, I'd like to give to His Holiness. To a serial killer? To a terrorist? No. I mean, not in order to support the terrorist. Not for that sake. But, you know, maybe give your blood to someone, for example. Okay, so this is the kind of goal. Not easy. We can right away see, ooh, I can do, I cannot do. If you feel there's a restriction, very good. It's just a better way of getting to know yourself. What are the mental, in other words, psychological obstacles to being generous? Do I have those or not? The disadvantages of not giving and the advantages of giving. All those help in the process of beginning to develop generosity. Okay. Now, actually, when we talk about the goal, so we basically spoke about the nature, so the goal, what do you think? Eliminating stinginess, is that sufficient in order to have the highest type of generosity? Just eliminating attachment, stinginess, miserliness, would that be sufficient? If we have that, you automatically have the highest type of giving, the Mahayana giving, or not? No, right? Why not? All sentient beings. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, the wish to be able to take sentient beings. Yeah. So it's the same like when you're an arhat, you've overcome attachment, you've overcome anger, right? Someone who's become self-liberated, who's overcome anger, doesn't mean they have the same type of compassion and love that a bodhisattva has. It doesn't come automatic. Not automatically there. Although you've removed one of the obstacles, but there's still the imprints of anger, the imprints of hatred. They will still not allow us right away automatically to have that love and compassion for all sentient beings. So it needs more of an effort. Okay. So this is what the texts usually describe. You need to not just remove stinginess, also to cultivate the wish to give everything to all sentient beings in order for them to attain enlightenment, to attain the paramita of generosity in this case in particular. All right. So what are the mental obstacles? So anyway, the idea is here with the goal, though it may be overwhelming. Sorry, I forget to mention that. Even though it may be overwhelming, oh my God, I could never do this. Well, to think I cannot do this right now, never say never, kind of. So you know, I will be able to do this at some point, but at least I understand what the goal is. By understanding what the goal is, I can go in that direction and not go astray. Okay. And it gives us a sense of determination. The higher the goal, the stronger we work towards it. It's never, oh, I've just given away all my money. I've given away 99%. My daughter was born. I've given 99% of my possession now. Well, not enough. It's pretty amazing. If you still got billions left, that's also still got lots left. But nonetheless, you're aware. You've heard about the news, which is very. I thought it was very beautiful, and especially because I was just doing the generosity part when Mark Zuckerberg gave away 99.9% of. Thought, oh, that's nice, but of course that's not enough. So if we reach that level, we can rejoice. We can, you know, feel good, wonderful. I'm able to do this now, but so we don't rest because there's more to go to. Now, what are the mental obstacles to being generous? What are the mental obstacles? Stinginess. Yeah, self-grasping. What else? Regret. Sure, regret. Yeah, regretting having given too much. Okay, what else? Exactly. Attachment. Right? Yeah. Attachment to the self, attachment to mine. Okay? Yes. And therefore to the object itself. Yeah. Depending on how beneficial you think it's useful to you. It's not garbage. We're not attached to garbage. We can easily give away our garbage, right? Okay. Good. So, therefore, the obstacles, understanding what are our personal obstacles. So, as Leora said, well, basically, to me, it's beneficial. I'm attached to myself. So, to understand this chain of how we got to that attachment, first, there's a misperception of who I am, right? Perceiving of an intrinsic I, perceiving of a separate kind of I. So, can you all please perceive of your own inherent I? Any kind of perception there of a separate I, something that is separate from mind and body? Do you have a sense of like a controller separate of I, right? Okay. And do you get a sense that first there's the sense it's separate, and then there's a sense that is more important? Can you get in touch with your own personal I more important? Can you feel it? Yeah, it's there actually at all times. I'm more important. My happiness is more important. Feels that way, right? And if my happiness is more important, the next step is that which provides me with happiness, I need that. Okay, all right. So that's exactly what's happening here. So stinginess is just an expression of that attachment. Okay. So the attachment is described like a rope tying the mind. Attachment. Miserliness is actually a type of attachment, right? It's a type of attachment. What is miserliness? How would you describe it? Usually we describe anger as a state of mind that exaggerates the positive qualities of something and wants to be removed from them, that wants to harm the object. Attachment is a type of awareness that exaggerates the positive qualities of something and wants to be with it. What is miserliness? How would you describe that? Where do you exaggerate? Is there also an aspect of exaggerating the mind that arises? Does it exaggerate something? And what does it do? What do you think? How would you feel your own miserliness? Just think, I just told you, you have to give away, as part of this course, you have to give your entire money to charity. Pardon? Okay, exaggerating. A sense of loss. Yeah. there's a fear. You're talking about a bit of a fear here. Okay, but let's just separate those out, because like Leora, you're talking about the cause, the fundamental cause. You know, I mean mine. That's why we get angry. That's why we have attachment. That's why we have jealousy. So you're looking at the fundamental cause, right? The fundamental cause is like the sense I am the center of the universe. Then the sense that my happiness is more important. What belongs to me. So, but what is the stinginess focus on me or on the object? The object, right? Actually, of course, the sense of I need this that precedes it. It's like jealousy focuses on the good quality of another person, right? It comes out of I need to have that. But that's not what jealousy does, right? So I need to have that characteristic. That's what comes first. I need to have that good quality whenever we are jealous of. Okay, so now with stinginess, it's holding on to the object, right? Exaggerating what? The object. And what the object can give us. Yeah. So holding on to the object, seeing it exaggerated and not being able to give it. Not being able to give it. Seeing as greater than it is and not being able to give it. That's stinginess, right? But stinginess is not the only problem, and attachment is not the only problem to giving. That kind of stinginess. Because think of the recipient. When can giving be difficult? To some recipients it's easy, to others it's difficult. No stinginess in both cases, and still you can give to one person, so you're happy to give it to some people but not to others. What could then be the obstruction? When you don't like someone. No, without being good to you. This is a good person. Yeah, he does something wonderful for other people. That's a serial killer. Okay?
I don't want him to be happy.
You don't want to, you want this person to be happy, and you don't want this person to be happy. You want to punish this person. Yes, you're absolutely right. But I'm just saying, the obstacle, so as Nissim just said, what is the reason? In the first place, we cannot give the object because we need it ourselves. In the case of miserliness or stinginess, we want the object for ourselves, right? That's a different scenario where we cannot give. But there are times when we can give the object away. I can give this cup to anyone. I have put it aside to be given away. I can give it to this person, but I cannot give it to that person. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Of course, it all comes down to the me. No, Leora, this of course. But I'm saying it's our dislike, it's our hatred for that person, possibly dislike. We don't like this person, and like whoever said it, we don't want them to be happy, which is responsible more directly. You're still right. Indirectly, fundamentally, it's always the self, always that. But then more directly, what is the thought? I don't want this guy to be happy. I don't want to give something to them. I don't want, they should be punished and they shouldn't be. So a very clear sense, this person should not get, this person should get. Right? Okay. And if you have a favorite friend, we can even, without disliking one friend, without disliking the other person or the other friend, we like this friend a little bit more, so we give to that friend. Okay. Again, we cannot give to this person as easily as to that person. All right. And of course, if there's reward involved, then it's even harder. So it's not stinginess, but expecting something. Oh, if I give to this person, I get... So it can be even worse than just like and dislike. So I just don't want. It's not, I don't expect anything in return. I may even give anonymously. Okay. So in that case, never mind, you know, but I don't want this person to be happy. This person I see as something negative. But I could also feel, oh, if I give to them, they always remember. They usually repay me. Okay. Anyway, so these are all motivations to check when we give. First of all, what about the object? Can I easily give away the object? If I can easily give away the object, what about the recipient? What are my reasons I can give to this person and I cannot give to that? Am I thinking, do I want something back? Do I expect something back? Do I expect even a thank you? If I can give anonymously, It's also something to check. Can I check? Can I give without them knowing my name? Can I make a donation without anyone ever finding out how generous I was? Or does my name have to be somewhere? Okay, it's also interesting to check, yes? No, but in each moment, it's a different object. So miserliness, not to put too much water. You know, like I don't want to give too much water, or I don't want to give water and benefit my neighbor. In that moment is the water. In other, it's always a different object. It changes in each moment, doesn't it? Like I ask you, you have two pieces of cake, or I have two pieces of cake. I want to give you one, I give you the smaller one. I don't want to give you the bigger one. In that moment, it's miserliness with a cake. You know, it's in each situation. Each mind is different. You're right. In general, is the but if you focus on each awareness, the object changes, doesn't it? Okay? Yes. Nissim, you want to say something? Nissim, did you want to say? No.
Because okay. Sometimes people miserliness is only mind. Mm-hmm. But sometimes
it's with everything. Yeah, with everything. But then, isn't it like with everything? Yeah, I wonder, even though it's not their water, maybe it's not their water, but they still don't want to give. It's like a habit. Maybe it's like a habit. It's not even yours, yours to give. I mean, if you don't give it, you can't keep it, but still not wanting to give. Am I making sense? That's also possible. Some people may just as a habit, it's a tendency. Okay. Anyway, so it's just a way to get to know miserliness better. And other reasons for attachment, of course, for being unable to give. And the fear.
That's not miserliness. If I think, if it's not mine and I don't give it, I think it could be only, miserliness is I don't want to give it to spend money. Usually it's represented by object. Whatever. But if I don't want to give, which is not mine, it's only because I hate it.
No. I don't think so. I think even if you don't dislike the person, you just don't want to give. It's kind of like a hesitation towards giving. But like a habit, exactly. Like a habit. It's not yours. For example, someone else gives you lots of money and say, give it to other people, right? And you don't even want to give it. Like give it to the beggars. Right? There may be situations when someone gives you a whole bunch of money, says, sorry, I'm busy, give it to the beggars. And you don't want to give it to all, I don't want to give it to these beggars. It's like, it's almost like, it's annoying. I mean, I don't know, it's different for different people, but sometimes there's like, I don't want to give, it annoys me. So no joy in giving. It's not your money, you don't dislike the person, you just have no joy in giving. Yes.
When I talk about myself, yeah. Money, because I don't think that this is the most important thing. I'm more talking about to them about being generous, mentally generous, or mentally stinginess.
Yes, yes.
Don't be this way. Just be, you know, be generous yes. with the thing, not the thing, the object that you have.
Right, right.
What you have inside.
Yes, but it's sometimes easier to give that than to give possessions. That's so true. That's true. We'll speak about this. Yeah, but that's not even called generosity. I mean, this is like giving love, which has the aspect of generosity, like practicing patience. We'll speak about this when we talk about patience, when you give someone sweet words. So you practice patience and you give your love, your compassion. Here, generosity has three types. Giving material things, giving the Dharma, and giving protection from fear. Yeah, so giving protection. So we speak about this, but I think initially, because the first one is usually the basis for the rest, we start with giving of material things. It's not mentioned here first, but in Pabongar Rinpoche's book, it's the giving of material things first. And I think that's also important. It just depends. We need to address all of those, and we will. Yeah, so giving of love, of course, but that's already love itself. Giving love is generating love. Yeah, so giving time is a difficult one, right? Especially now we have a sense time is money, so it's difficult. Okay, anyway, disadvantages of not giving. What are the disadvantages of not giving? Well, feeling always worried. If we don't give, if we're not generous, there's a sense of worry. Okay, so if we don't give time to other people, I guess in another way we could say there's also worry. You know, there's always worry because if we don't happily give, we're more worried about keeping things. Okay, there's regret and worry at the time of death, lack of material goods, lack of other people giving us their time. There's no one there to listen to us, to take us to a hospital when we need so, etc. Though that's, it's kind of generosity, but it's also helping others. So it's not really mentioned it in this context. So there's no help when we need it, and there's no Dharma. So lots of disadvantages to become aware of those. So the worry, the feeling of regret at the time of death. We lack the most basic things. We have little choices, and we don't receive help when it's necessary. And we have to spend, if we the more possessions we have, so the idea is not just being miser, but to also accumulate a lot of things. The more stuff we have, the more burdens we have. So having possessions are seen as a huge burden. How much time do we spend to clean our house, our car, our possessions? How much time do we spend looking after them? Right? Our body, for example. I mean, to give away our body, we don't want to give it away. We don't hesitate to give it because we want to be of service to all sentient beings. No. It's our body. We don't want to give it for that reason. How much time do we spend on a daily basis to look after it? Right? Again, it's a huge burden. We have to spend a lot of time looking after our body. So then in the scriptures, it says our body is unclean, it's smelly, prone to disease, rushing towards death. It's under the control of karma. It's the basis for all the negativities we accumulate. It's the basis for harm, etc. So it's a truth of suffering. It's better to give it up. Okay? So pleasant experiences we have lead to more attachment, more arrogance, unpleasant experiences. So all this is in relation to the body. So right now we cannot give up our body because we're so attached to it. So to loosen the sense of our body, how actually it is not as wonderful as you may seem to think, that may be able to at least give parts of it, give up parts of it. But it actually, you know what it takes me to, why am I mentioning it? Because one of the ways to practice patience is to visualize you give it. Okay, so this is what I talk about later. So then it makes more sense. You visualize, you give your body to all sentient beings. You don't give it to them. But you feel like I'm just using it to benefit others. You actually mentally give away all your things. You think every day, these are not my possession, I'm just using them to benefit others. That's said to be a very powerful means to, because if we give everything away, we need to use wisdom here. If we have nothing to use for ourselves, but we start using our things in a more wiser way. So instead of like, oh, I want this, I want to just, you know, I have like a strong craving, I want this, I want that. We don't use our material things with the same attachment if we think we give it away. Okay, so that's said to be, and that's why I say about the body. To visualize, you give away your body. And there in the scriptures it says, well, isn't that cheating? You're not really giving it away, but you're pretending you are. But no, in the back of your mind, as Nissim would say, so in the back of your mind, there's always the sense, this belongs to others. It's just on loan. I shouldn't waste it. So the stronger your habit becomes, the stronger the sense, this is just on loan. So I don't want to fill my body with junk food because this body is on loan. I need to use it for all sentient beings. I have responsibility. I have to keep it healthy. I have to keep it strong so it can work for others. Does that make sense? That kind of sense? So I want to finish here for today. I want to finish here on the last 5-10 minutes. We spend a few minutes in breathing. And then we go through giving away whatever we have to others. We visualize giving it away, And from now on, it's on loan. So during the time of the course, and it might be possibly later, but at least for the next 2 days, right now, we do give everything away. All right? Okay. So you visualize that. But let's just take, again, a minute or so to just breathe. So watch the breathing. So now, first of all, visualize that you give away all your possessions. You mentally give everything away. So that even though you still administer your possessions, in actuality, you've given them to all sentient beings. And you utilize them in that way. So whatever money you spend for others, for their benefit. Your house or your apartment, you're just living there, but it's for the benefit of sentient beings. Same is true for your car, or your bicycle, or motorbike. And then think you give away your body. Your arms, your legs, your heart, your other organs, your brain. giving it to all sentient beings. And you're keeping it healthy and strong. Only to be of benefit to sentient beings. And since you've both given away your possessions, your body, to all living beings, lastly visualize you give away all your root virtues, all the positive karma you've accumulated. You give that to sentient beings. And now conclude your meditation by rejoicing in the fact that you've unburdened yourself, in particular from all possessions from this body. And rejoice in the fact that you now use it to benefit all sentient beings who experience unbearable suffering. Just focus on that feeling of joy and relief. Okay. Wow, we're so free now. Everything gone. No, but seriously, this is how it's described. To start, we just mentally give it away. And then later on, when we give something, it's almost just like return. It says you return that which you've already given. So you're just giving it to the rightful owner. So I don't know how effective you may find that. It may take a while to get used to it. But this is the first step. You mentally visualize you've given everything away to sentient beings, to the Buddhas. Everything is gone. Okay. Now, as you go back to your room, and then also for tomorrow morning, please be mindful of whatever you do. So to remind yourself of generosity, as part of generosity, to focus on your own mind of wanting to give. You can do so mentally, for example, but to keep mindful. And together with mindfulness, of course, to avoid the 10 known virtues, 7 of those you're pretty much protected from, unless you break the silence. But then also the last 3 of ill will, attachment, covetousness, so anger, awarenesses of resentment, anger, awareness of attachment, of wrong views, and so forth. So you generate mindfulness, introspection, and attentiveness. So those awarenesses help us to become aware of what we're doing, be more introspective. So mindfulness at all times, and like looking inwards, what am I thinking, what am I doing, and paying attention. So those are different states of mind that enable us to, have a virtuous state of mind to make the most of this weekend. All right, so let's conclude with a few dedication prayers, and then I'll see you again tomorrow morning.